everybody. You're listening to BBS Radio, Station 1, Growing Up Indigo with Adina Bannick. And today, our guest is Dr. David Lowe. And believe it or not, we have been kind of, you know, trying to get this show on the road for a very long time. And I thought it was going to be a breeze. I really did. I thought it's going to be very simple. We're going to just go right through it. And boy, when he sent me this information and I started reading it, this is going to be good. We might have two shows here. So let me just tell you a little bit about him before I introduce him. David is a doctor. He wrote a book, and the book is called Universal Spiritual
Philosophy. I'm like,
thank you. And practice. He actually says USPP. So I kind of like that. It's back in the USPP. So anyway, he wrote it. It's all about dreams, and it's all about, you know, just spiritual practices. And at first, I felt that it was kind of, I don't want to say, you know, beginners, because it's not really true. You can come in anywhere and get the message. But the more I read and the more I looked, the more fascinating it became. So what David has done and what we were working on, and the reason it took so long to have David come on, is because I really wanted him to do something. I have had so many people ask me over the years if I do dream interpretations, and I do. But I'm certainly not a specialist. I'm not a doctor. And although I know more than the average layman, I would not bill myself as a dream analyst. But I do know David is. And what I wanted was for him to branch out and give you a session. You know, you have a dream, you don't know what it is, you don't know what it's about, and you want to know what it is. We all go to those sites, those dream sites, and we will type in words and we'll try to piece it together, and we won't get anybody live. You know, they'll say they'll contact us, but they usually don't. David Lowe will actually give you a session and talk about what your dream means. This is invaluable as far as I'm concerned. I think it's amazing. So it took a while, and we've been talking about it and working about it. And I just want to read you just a few things, the table of contents of his book. The chapter one is beliefs and attitudes, experiences and spirituality. Chapter two is embracing theism and atheism. And chapter three is questions surrounding belief. I mean, there's so much here that I'm really excited. I really didn't think I would be. Not that I don't trust him. Part three is the mechanics of spirituality. Here is where I found the questions that I wanted to ask him myself. And I thought I was going to be asking him some really esoteric, you know, questions. And he already has it down. So we're going to just like go right to him, and we're going to welcome him. And I do. I welcome David Lowe. And David, thank you for coming on our show.
It's a great pleasure, Adina, to be here with you today. Yes.
Thank you so much. And could you just let us know what made you want to write this book? What was it that made you want to do this?
I'd been teaching religious studies courses for a while in area universities, and I became more and more frustrated with the whole situation in the world. You know, there are a number of books out there which do make the point about how all religion ultimately comes out of the same place. The great truths of humanity, you can find them in all the external politics and dramas are all completely misleading. It's all the same underneath, but so difficult to see. And so few books explain that in easy layman's terms. That's what
right.
I tried to do.
Right.
In a very informal, entertaining way. That's basically right. what the book's about.
As a matter of fact, that's what I meant when I said you can come in here being a novice. You can come in here being, you know, knowing a lot and still get just as much as you want or need from it. And that's what I liked about it. So that's very, very true. I wanted to know a little bit about your background. Could you tell us, you know, what you are? I know you have your doctorate. I know you have your master's. So what is that in?
My whole life story is a continual journey of more of somewhat intentional and then finally really intentional self-discovery.
Mm-hmm.
Master's in community counseling, 6 years of official spiritual seeking, living in ashrams. Seven years worth of study teaching here in Philadelphia, leading up to my PhD in religious studies.
Mm-hmm.
All the while, lots of spiritual practice, lots of pilgrimage and traveling occasionally, and a great deal and always tracking my dreams. Your dreams,
right.
It varies. I mean, almost everybody can really benefit from paying more attention to their dreams than they do, but some people more so than others. Pretty much
Absolutely.
Everybody can benefit, but there are some people for whom they are more important than average, and I'm definitely one.
Right.
A lot of
absolutely. I absolutely feel that way as well. I've always remembered my dreams. I have a lot of questions to ask you toward the end about that. But right now, what I really would like to do with you is get a sense of, I think, where you want to go with this book, where you want to go with your site, and what you want to offer people.
Yes, yes. I want the book to be read by everybody on earth so that people will stop fighting, so that people will stop fighting and realize that it's all the same thing. And the dream, the emphasis on dreams and spirituality is all about deepening our understanding philosophically to really
mm-hmm.
the basic dimensions of human spiritual need, psychological and spiritual configuration and need, and how dreams are the primary and most evident way
mm-hmm.
of contact with higher reality, which is available to all of us.
Absolutely.
And they are almost universally ignored. But
absolutely.
It's funny because they are almost as important as food and water, really. Everybody dreams every night, and we basically stop functioning socially and physically if we're not
if
allowed
we
to
don't dream.
Do we?
Right. Mm-hmm.
If we're still allowed to get enough sleep, but
right.
we're not allowed to dream, we stop functioning.
Exactly. I hallucinate
yeah.
if I don't dream. I really do. The next day, I can't function. So
I
agree. Mm-hmm. Can I give you a little testament, just somebody? David's book is an incredible testament to his life's work on his own spiritual path. Not only does he include many of the psycho-spiritual traditions, but also the mind-body issues. So it is truly a new kind of comprehensive spiritual textbook to be studied and pondered over. This is a man who has lived the spiritual path for many, many years, and now can become one of its best teachers because of his understanding and personal experiences. And I absolutely concur with that. I think that I know that you have done so much work on yourself, not just this. You know, you've done work on your own psyche, you've done work, inner work, and I call it walking. Wait, is it talking the walk or walking the talk? It's one of those.
Walking your talk, sure.
Yeah.
Walking your talk, absolutely.
But that's what you do. That's what you do. And that's why you're here. You're here because when people ask me if I can do this, I tell them this is not my forte. I like it. I can do it. But I'm not qualified to do this. You are. How many people do you think do this? Not many at all. If you go to any site, any dream site, you'll have a form. You'll have like little, you know, you can look up words and then you can piece it together. Then they say that you can write your dream and they may or may not get back to you. You, however, are going to be a dream counselor analyst. I mean,
absolutely.
That's amazing. This is what I've been waiting for. So this is what I wanted. I mean, forget about our clients. I wanted this for me. So I think this is fantastic. So,
cool. Let me say briefly that most people share dreams only in the context of an established relationship with a therapist. But with rising consciousness in the country, I think it's mm-hmm. going to happen more. It's going to happen more and more often that people are willing to take a chance to just call a dream specialist outside
Absolutely.
The context of an established therapeutic relationship in order to get the lowdown on a particular
Absolutely.
Dream.
I totally agree with you. And you know what? This is why you will be in demand. This is why people do need you. I can't tell you how many times I've had a dream and I have so many questions to ask you about them. And I've said, I wonder, you know, what exactly this means. Now, I do know that it's personal, you know, of course, subjective, objective, but, you know, you would know more than I'll know, I believe, which is
sure.
what?
Okay.
So
maybe
that's
I will,
why,
maybe I won't. We'll give it a shot.
Right, exactly. But still, my chance is better with you than it is with me. So that's why I'm saying this. I am so thrilled that we got this together because I think that you are going to be, I don't really even know anybody who does this. I don't.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because dreams are so important and so universal, and it's again though they are private and personal, but they have a certain universal dimension, and there are underlying mechanical things about them which are the same for everybody.
Right.
And you need a certain you need not only to have studied certain things, but more importantly than that, you need a real interest in dreams and a certain kind of spiritual aptitude for understanding symbols and archetypes.
Absolutely.
But it's interpreting dreams is something that anyone can become better at doing, but some folks more so than others. But it's something which I seem to have a bit of a gift for. And if the work that I've done with some people already is any indication, and I do have a lot to offer in that regard. So
I know you do. I'm just looking at just your body of work here. And I have to be honest, I didn't think that you were going to go into this kind of depth with it. And you did. And I'm like, oh, my God. You know, I'm so excited about this. I wanted to ask you a question, and it's going a little ahead of things, but I wanted to know about whether you can tell us when it's precognitive, when it is lucid, when it is just a dream. I also want to know, I've always heard that when we dream about a home or a house, it's right. us. Is that true?
Well, yeah. In general, a house can refer to any large units of things in a person's life. For example, different compartments of their mind, subconscious, okay. superconscious, so forth, different compartments of their life, a whole life. A house can be your whole life, the different compartments and levels and so forth. A house
okay.
can be your whole it can be your whole mind, a different compartments and so forth. It can be a whole marriage, say, over the course of a 30-year marriage, all different phases that you went through. It can
wow.
be a house can be a graduate curriculum, all the courses that you took at different times with certain professors. A house can be any large unit of large numbers of like specific similar things.
And how do you know?
Well, it's in general, when a person dreams about a house, the context of the dream, the things the house does in the dream,
the
feelings, personal situation,
right?
Yeah, the person's going through, his personal situation. All that is critical for understanding how the symbol of a house in a dream applies to the meaning for that person.
Got it. Now, I wanted to know, do you want to go back to the beginning and just discuss, you know, how you got into this, why, the core beliefs, things like that, or are you comfortable going further? I just want to know. I'm leaving it to you.
I think I'm comfortable going further in terms of what I think you're going to do. So let's just go with that and see what happens.
Okay, wonderful. Because I have so many questions that I really want to ask you. The stuff that we do, this show, is all about metaphysics. So it's kind of, for me, I just looked at over here, it's heaven and hell system, karma
right.
and reincarnation, quantum re-expression system,
right.
no afterlife. I mean, this is the stuff I want. So I don't want to just jump into it if you're not ready to do that. But I do want to know, how do we know when we're being visited by someone who's passed over?
Okay.
Do you know?
Right. Oh yeah. Right. Right. So a relative or a loved one or some or a close friend who's passed over may or may not be just an ordinary symbol. Okay. Most of the time, when people see deceased loved ones in dreams, in my experience, that loved one is only a symbol. Okay, so a grandfather,
okay.
for example, your grandmother in a dream is not literally your grandmother most of the time.
Right, right.
A grandmother symbol refers to a deeper feminine aspect of yourself.
Got it.
Which represents your particular concept of grandmotherliness, as it were. Okay.
Yes.
Now, if the loved one or a deceased one visiting you says something really meaningful and powerful, the dream is especially vivid or powerful in some way with
mm-hmm.
regard to feeling or what was said or the overall quality of the dream is in some sense emotionally powerful for you and relevant,
mm-hmm.
then that is a you know, sincere visitation dream, as they're called. But otherwise, most of the time, the deceased relatives are just symbols, like any other symbol in the dream. If there's a lot of power associated with the person, what he's saying, how you feel about it, the overall context, if there's emotional power in it for you, then it's a visitation for sure.
I understand. Okay, that's exactly what I thought, that it was never the person, it's always an aspect of ourselves. What I do want to ask, though, and this has been driving me crazy for many, many years. I had a dream once where, and this is, I don't even know what to say, a sword was pulled out of my entire body. It was pulled on my left side, and it was pulled out, and the pain was so excruciating, and I felt it for days. Do you happen to know what that could have been?
It's obvious. Well, you know, it's certainly an extraction of some kind. If something was pulled out of you, you were relieved of something. I mean, in the context of a human life, is as for all of us, a spiritual journey. We all go through obstacles and difficulties, which are all meant to teach us things. And in your case, there was some profoundly deep, deep karmic element involving your whole body, which needed to be removed. We don't know what that thing was. We do know that it involved certainly not anything, probably nothing on the conscious level in terms of what you could think of or remember, but certainly some element of pain from previous lifetimes, maybe many previous lifetimes, which was removed through grace. I mean, through some act of God's self, you were unburdened of that thing. I mean,
it hurt.
Well, no, it hurt. But, you know, it hurt for a while, and you didn't seem to feel any better. But we have no choice to believe that it was better overall, that it took place, because it happened and it hurt for a while, and now the hurt's gone. So something was...
The hurt's still there. I mean, I still have it. So that's why I was always so curious about it. I also wanted to ask a question, and I know I'm jumping all over the place, but there's so many questions I want to ask. I have always been told and read that we have a separate dream world. In other words, our dream world is another complete world. Can you explain that to us?
My understanding is that there's only one reality.
Okay.
And the overall impression we have, I mean, each of us as separate human beings like to think of ourselves as having our own personal sense of heaven, our own personal sense of beauty and love and joy, which will be individual to us and us only. What quantum physics tells us, and what human psychology seems to tell us, and what the spiritual masters say in all their metaphorical poems and so forth, seems to indicate that, you know, there's only one reality, and that reality is made up of an infinite series of parallel realities put together. So this, the reality which we are experiencing now, is what you might call the primary dream in the mind of God. But there are an infinite, number of other realities coexisting.
Yes.
And dreams have many possible meanings, depending on the amount of effort you can put into trying to interpret and decipher them. But there is one ideal meaning that any dream has applying to the dreamer at any one particular point in his or her life. But we all have a series of dream worlds, if you will, which complements our own universe. Okay.
Yes.
So dream worlds exist in parallel to the primary dream world, which is the one that each of us shares, that we all share together. That is the primary dream world, the one that we're experiencing right now in waking consciousness.
Exactly.
The other dream worlds are all parallel to this one. There are an infinite number of them. Okay, that is the glory and majesty of God's self's ongoing, bubbling creation. It's all these worlds coexisting. But yes,
now,
as individual human beings, we all do have our own personal sense of joy, beauty, and love. And that would correspond to our own dream world.
I have heard of people who don't dream at all. And I don't know about that. I always dream. What can you say about people that don't dream?
Well, everybody dreams every night, neurophysiologically anyway. Everybody displays on EEGs the brainwave signature associated with certain stages of sleep in which dreams take place. They take place in all stages of sleep. 80% of them take place in, you know, so-called REM sleep, which you've heard
of.
And if you wake up If you take all the people who say that they never remember their dreams, if you wake them up during REM sleep, 80% of them, 80% of people who say that they never remember their dreams will report dreaming if you wake them up during REM sleep.
Okay.
They just don't happen to remember them the next morning. Okay.
Yes.
So that remaining 20%, we technically don't know anything about, but everybody has that same brainwave signature during different stages of sleep, which indicate dream activity, especially during REM sleep. So, yeah, we all dream. Everybody dreams every night. All mammals dream.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They have the same brain. They have the same series of stages, roughly speaking.
Could you tell us about lucid dreaming and what exactly that is?
Lucid dreaming is something that people get into to basically it refers to doing specific exercises and techniques to increase your level of awareness while dreaming.
Mm-hmm.
For people on conscious spiritual paths who meditate and so forth, that tends to happen anyway, because the effort, the overall effort of trying to improve your awareness of this reality naturally expands your awareness of all realities. So as you try to improve awareness of this reality, you will at some point, guaranteed, begin having spontaneously lucid dreams in which you will experience greater awareness during, namely, you will be aware that you are dreaming. That's what lucid dreaming is about.
Okay.
As opposed to having the dream happen to you, you are aware that you're dreaming.
So it means that you are in a dream, you're aware that you're dreaming, and you can sort of direct it as well, correct?
Right, exactly.
Okay,
and there are people who get into that, sort of a big adventuresome thing to do, have sexual experiences and so forth. That's a phase which people go through in terms of their spiritual growth.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that lucid dreaming comes along as a byproduct of ordinary spiritual growth. And it can teach you things. It can be very fascinating at first and very sort of enjoyable and interesting. But as soon as you stop learning things from it, it goes away. That's what happened to me. I never tried to do lucid dreaming. It just happened to me for a while, and then it stopped after a while because I couldn't learn anything more from it. Yeah.
So, why? What do you mean? Explain that to me.
Well, you know how as a teenager you grow up, you really get into cars and clothing and your clothes and so forth.
Yeah.
But after a while, all that stuff doesn't mean as much to you anymore.
Yes.
Because you work your way through it. It's the same with lucid dreaming. People in the course of their spiritual growth will begin spontaneously having lucid dreams.
And I understand.
That is a very, very fascinating, powerful world to be in. All these wonderful experiences, gorgeous scenery and so forth, sensual experiences and whatnot. It's all very, really cool and powerful and wonderful and ego-boosting because you're in higher reality and so forth. But eventually you realize, so what?
Mm-hmm.
This is just more stuff, Sure, it's fascinating, but I'm no longer interested after a while. I've learned everything I can from it. And then you move on. But, people spend their entire lifetime interested in lucid dreaming. Some folks who are really into lucid dreaming and don't really have a spirituality which takes them beyond that. Lucid dreaming can be a preoccupation for life for those folks.
Yeah. What would it mean if you were to fly in every dream for many years?
It would mean only that you are preoccupied with transcendence and that you're doing a lot of thinking above and beyond your normal context of being.
I understand.
Flying, there are all sorts of metaphorical things which that suggests, thinking above, thinking philosophically, transcending reality, getting away from problems, an overview of everything. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because for many, many years, I never walked anywhere in a dream. I only flew everywhere. And then it stopped, And now I don't fly. It's very rare that I fly now. But from a good portion of my life, I flew everywhere. So thank you for telling me that. I also wanted to know, this is just stuff that everybody has. You know, when you're falling asleep and you are just about to fall asleep and then you fall. You know, you just have that falling. What is that? You know, the falling as you're about to fall asleep?
You know, it's interesting. I don't think the actual transition from waking to sleeping, I mean, by definition, you can't remember what that thing is. You just drop off. You know, I mean, I suppose no one to my knowledge has ever asked an enlightened being that question, although somebody probably has somewhere. But for most people who are unenlightened, who are not awake, and I think enlightenment does exist, it's very important, and that we can wake up, and we can wake up completely in this lifetime.
Yes.
For folks who are not awake, the transition from waking to the actual transition point from waking to sleeping is not something which is understood or remembered, in my experience. What you're saying is that as you begin to fall asleep, you actually have the experience of sort of falling. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes.
You know, in discussing these issues of internal experience and subjective means of trying to describe experience, which is totally internal, it's difficult for me to know what you're referring to. I never remember actually going to sleep. I just, you know, go to sleep. Sometimes I get stuck between in hypnagogic state, it's called, half awake, half asleep. There are times when most of us can remember times when we're kind of stuck asleep. We can't get out of it. We can't wake up.
Yeah.
We can't get out of this particular dream we're in. But the actual transition point from waking to sleeping, to actually falling into the first stage of sleep, is a mystery as far as personal experience is concerned, I think, for most people.
That's what I was talking about. When you find yourself just about to fall asleep and then realize you're falling from a great height and you just jump up, your whole body jumps up, and then you go back to sleep. That happens a lot.
Well, that sounds like sort of an exit experience along the lines of astral projection, which a lot of kids do. A lot of people do. You know, those exercises where you can sort of talk yourself into a very relaxed state. And then, you know, some people have a predisposition like I did, which sort of in which they naturally do this more easily than average. You can actually put yourself into a relaxed state and then actually intentionally exit your body, you know, and sit up and then float around. And there's a cord which connects your dream body to your physical body. You see that and so forth. I remember when I started doing transcendental meditation years and years ago, I would sometimes have experiences of actually involuntarily exiting my body without falling asleep.
I didn't know
that's
you do
not
TM
uncommon.
Too. That's
Sorry?
Really interesting. I do TM too. When I learned it at 17.
Right, right.
Yeah, that's weird.
I don't do TM anymore, but it is a normal process of meditation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, TM is essentially the same as what I'm doing now, insofar as meditation is meditation.
Right.
So many people, I mean, some people have a certain spiritual psycho predisposition to like be detached from their bodies, to ascend too much, to be scattered. I do.
Me too.
I certainly like that. And so we are psycho-spiritually predisposed from day one to have that happen more so than average. The whole thing of exiting your body is a fairly common experience for folks like you and me. You're probably skinnier than average, I would wager.
Say that again, please.
It is an irrelevant question. People to whom this happens, who are very scattered, to whom their dream body will exit their physical body more readily than average, are often very thin, are often very thin. They have a thin physical disposition.
I always was, yes.
Yeah,
definitely.
Right. That's
yes,
pretty much
fits. Absolutely.
The Vata
so
Ayurvedic
dosha. It's a nervous energy. I've always had a nervous energy type of body, yes.
Right.
So, yeah, that is me. Does it mean that when you stop doing things like that and you're walking or you're in control of a dream, does it mean that you are progressing and you're being more grounded?
I would say that folks who have this sort of disposition for their dream body, so separate from their physical body, need to focus on grounding.
Certainly. Right.
And if you're in a dream in which you're flying, someone like you or me is best off stopping flying and going down and lying on the ground, since we consciously know that we have an issue with being too detached from life and not grounded enough.
Okay.
So, yeah, it would certainly, for you and me, that would definitely be a progress.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. I understand. Okay. So I wanted to just get into a little bit of the book, you know, that you wrote, and I would like you to start where you want to start, because this is your book, and I'm ready to go anywhere you want to go.
Okay, well, let me go get a copy of the thing so I can look at it.
I can help you with it.
Okay.
We can look at, okay, I saw this, and I just, what is the heaven and hell system? Although I think I know, what do you feel? What is it that you feel the heaven and hell system is in dreams?
Right. I wanted to contrast two different paradigms of thinking in sort of common sense terms. One is mystical, one is orthodox. The heaven hell system is the common orthodox understanding which the Western religions look at the universe from. It is a cosmology, it's a cosmology, and in the context of religion, a cosmology is basically a set of concepts which tells us how the universe is set up. There's heaven, there's hell, and there's earth. Okay. There are questions that everybody asks themselves unconsciously as human beings because we have awareness. We may not have a conscious interest in what happens to the earth a million years from now or at the end of time, but subconsciously we do have that question. And so we ask it. And so because of that, in all the religions, there are developed concepts of heaven and hell. Where do we go after we die? Where do I go if I'm a bad person? Those questions occur to everybody subconsciously, whether or not we're interested in them consciously.
Mm-hmm.
So the notion of heaven and hell is found therefore in all the religions.
Right.
And it's a certain orthodox, normal way of looking at the world, which is good for people whose interest only goes so far in spirituality.
I see.
Okay. It just answers certain basic orthodox questions. Where do I go
after?
I
understand that. Yes,
yeah.
I do understand that. It's basically our core beliefs, and if we believe there's a heaven and we believe there's a hell, then we are going to utilize those to teach ourselves morals, ideals, and things like that. I think that's what you're saying, correct?
Well, yeah, and I as we get older and more spiritually sophisticated and subtle in our understanding, we begin to realize that heaven and hell are just sort of convenient soundbite constructs which the church fathers used as very easy ideas for you know, people to relate to. Heaven looks like this. Hell looks like this. If you're good, you go to one place. If you're bad, you go to another. It's like, you know, black and white understanding.
Right.
It's obviously much more subtle than that. So as we get older, the karma and reincarnation system begins to look a lot more sensible.
Right.
The reason why karma and reincarnation makes more sense is because it kind of looks at the universe more mechanically and scientifically. Okay, everything happens for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
There are consequences there are consequences of things we do now in future lifetime, and consequences from previous lifetimes in terms of what's happening to us now. So that is a more profound understanding, which looks at the actual consistent mechanics throughout the universe, and does not exclude the process of grace. It does not exclude the fact of grace. Grace being God's unmerited favor. So in spite of this, you know, mechanistic universe in which everything happens according to law and so forth, there can still be spontaneity. There can still be joy. There can still be, you know, when that sword was pulled out of your body in that dream, that was an act of grace, even though it left you raw. Because
oh my God.
Well, I mean,
I can still feel it. That's how bad it was.
Right. We have no choice but to have faith in the notion that even though it still pains you now, on some level you're learning from it. And hopefully, to the extent that, you know, alternative healing systems and healers and so forth can help you cope with that, you will do the appropriate things to rebuild your body and mind and to become more centered in this new reality of dealing with this pain. And you're learning something from dealing with that profound psychic pain.
Actually, you just put something together for me that was very heavy, that in this life I was supposed to go from one complete system of being to transformation and turning inside out. So you just explained that for me. See? Dreams really are important.
Right. You had some questions about dreams. The very first question you asked me involved two or three separate questions at the same time, and I didn't get around to answering them. So if you can remember that first question, I think that we can go in a very constructive direction for you.
Okay. Oh, my God. What did I ask? I'm not sure. I think I was probably asking about me and what precognition is, and
we'll go with that. All dreams come in the service of health and wholeness. That's Jeremy Taylor. The way I would put it is, all dreams come in the service of more profound potential happiness and fulfillment through greater spirituality. That's why they're there. That's what they're for. Okay.
Yes.
And when they come to us, a dream never comes to us to teach us something that we already know. There's always something more which it offers us. Mm-hmm. So even if it's a repetitive dream about the same thing over and over and over again, it's because you're not getting it.
Yes.
And there is a slow process of gradually building subconscious conviction on your part that, hey, this is important. I need to do something about it. And until you get that message, it's going to keep coming and coming and coming and happening again and again and again. But anyway, dreams imply and infer courses of action. They are all psychic in that they are all precognitive, and they are all psychic insofar as they infer and imply courses of action that we can undertake to make things better in our lives. They very rarely show you directly what you should do in terms of being precognitive, but they infer or imply more often what you should do.
Yes, I heard that was a way of protecting ourselves something like that.
I'll give you an example. I'll give you a very brief example. I was living with a housemate 30 years ago. This is like 35 years ago, and I had a dream. We were both very busy. We were both passing each other like ships in the night. We were both very separate, busy schedules, right? So I had a dream one night, and all the dream consisted of was him just looking at me in great anger. Really great, just looking at me in anger. That was the whole dream. And I realized, you know, something is going on with him, because he's not angry at me. We're good friends. So what's going on? So I figured what it meant was, I need to talk to him. I need to interact with him in some way, if nothing else. So I went out of my way and talked to him, And he really had to unburden himself of a lot of things that he needed to be talking about.
Wow.
And he expressed gratitude for being able to talk about it, because all we did, we weren't talking at all. We were good friends, but we weren't talking. We're just passing each other in the night, being very with our separate busy schedules. So if I hadn't have had that conversation with him, who knows what would have happened? He might have gone off the edge and done something stupid, or not paid his rent, or run away, or got into a car accident, or you know, got into a fight with his girlfriend. Who knows what would have happened?
And but, I learned that it was the opposite, that that person was an aspect of us.
Right.
That we wouldn't, you know, be able to deal with. So
right. And dreams,
your
you know, the
way was better, obviously.
Well, you see, the more a person is on a spiritual path, in my experience, from talking to various people about their dreams, the more likely there are to be literal elements in a dream. More often than not, I find that when I work with dreams at some small New Age psychic places where I sometimes go to talk to people about this, more often than not, they do have literal elements in their dreams, in which the girlfriend does indeed refer to the girlfriend and not to the feminine aspect of the person, or not to his own conception of the girlfriend. It
right.
does refer to the girlfriend instead of his conception of the girlfriend. More often, usually, of course, the girlfriend is just symbolic. Okay, and
right.
the girlfriend will refer to a feminine aspect of the dreamer, or his own personal conception
exactly.
of the girlfriend versus
yes.
the girlfriend herself. In this case, it did refer to the girlfriend. So in the case of the dream I just told you, that very simple dream, which this guy's glaring at me, it did refer to him as a person. The emotion displayed in the dream
know?
Was symbolic. I'm
how
sorry?
Did you know? How did you know? How
well,
did you know?
A process of inference. He's glaring at me, number one.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, we're good friends. We have no mm-hmm. reason to be angry at each other. So, therefore, number three, this dream has meaning. It happened for a reason. So, what must it mean? You put those three facts together. One, he's glaring at me. Two, we're good friends. He's not angry in real life. Three, the dream has meaning, and dreams happen for a reason. So, therefore, what must it mean? You can only... Something's wrong. It happened for a reason. You need to interact with him and find out what's going on.
That's interesting. That really is, because I would have assumed that he was an aspect that I didn't want to see in myself, and that I was angry and glaring at myself.
Most of the time, you would be right. Most of the time, you would be right. You'd be exactly right. The average person who has a dream of a friend glaring at him, it would refer to your particular conception of the person. You know, the person
mm-hmm.
is inside you. The person is part of yourself. It is the person is inside you.
Yes.
Okay. There is an aspect of yourself which exists as that person, and that is the part of yourself which you have not made friends with. If that person is glaring at you in your dream,
mm-hmm.
There's something about what that person means to you inside yourself that you need to make friends with, that you need to process
okay.
stuff with.
Okay.
And you're right. Most of the time, you would be right. Absolutely.
Okay. I want to, before, you know, this hour is like flying by. I can't believe it. Before we get to some things that I would like you to, you know, tell people, I just want to ask you some very, you know, normal dreams that everyone has. What does it mean when your teeth fall out? I know, I believe that's insecurity. Is that true?
Teeth falling out is a very common motif. It refers most often to losing capacities or abilities in some context or other.
Huh.
So a person who's quite commonly a person who's getting old can no longer drive, can no longer lift up his grandson, can no longer walk that quickly anymore, can no longer read well, and so forth. Yeah, you know, a dream of losing your teeth having teeth fall out would be pretty typical. That is a very common motif found pretty much across the whole world. Usually refers in some context or other to losing capacities of some sort or other.
Yeah. Wow. I had them when I was young. So
but not necessarily. Not necessarily. It can mean many things, but that is what it most commonly means. Something
okay.
along those lines.
Lose. Okay. And my next question you kind of hit on. What about when you are driving and you're in the car, but you're out of control. You're not in control of the car.
Right, right.
What is that?
Most commonly, in some sense or other, your life isn't going as planned, and you're sort of out of control with regard to things that are happening. Things are happening around you which you would prefer not to see happen, and which are sort of more or less, you're kind of being bossed around by circumstances in life to an extent which you shouldn't be. Things are happening to you which are random, which are uncontrolled, which are dangerous, which are problematic,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
you're basically not in control of your life in the way that you you should be. And if you have a dream like that over and over, that's a real indication to do things in your life to get better in control. Do things to to bring everything under control and know what you're doing overall and in the different parts of your life. You need to focus on the things which you are not doing well and get them into order so that nothing goes crazy on you in your life.
That's good. That hasn't happened to me in many, many years, but it used to. So I'm glad to hear that. I also wanted you to just talk a little bit about what your services are. And I still want to get to this part three, this whole thing, but I don't think we're going to have time. So I would like you to please tell our listeners, what you want to offer and where you can be found and how they can reach you and your practice.
So anyway, I'll do that. If you're having a dream, but this is for all your listeners and you. If you're having a dream, if you're having especially repetitive, perhaps unpleasant dreams, or any kind of dream really, and you're mystified as to what it means, especially if there's turmoil in your life, I will give you an hour's worth of conversation on the phone for $25 to help you understand it. And we'll use a very definite, systematic procedure over the course of that time to look at the dream, figure out what it means, and then decide together what course of action might be best for you to do in order to honor the dream, because it happened for a reason, and you do want to change and better your life on the basis of what the dream's telling you. You want to at least consider altering what you're doing as a result of the message that the dream has for you. So $25 for a whole hour of conversation. Better than that, $40 written through my website, plus a phone conversation. I can have time to really sit back and think about it, and your time will be better spent and in a more organized way to do it for $40 written than $25 on the phone for an hour. Although overall, I think the $25 on the phone for an hour will probably be the most popular service.
Probably, But this is amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's amazing that you're going to do this. You are going to have so many people just banging down that door. You can reach David at worldspirituality.com. And that's your site, right? And that's
David at worldspirituality.com is the email. David
right.
Lowe, MS, David Lowe, MSPhD.com is the website. David Lowe, no E, David Lowe, L-O-W,
right.
MSPhD.com. That's
okay.
Masters of Science, Doctor of Philosophy.com. David Lowe, MSPhD.com.
I mean, I can't believe that you're really doing this. I can't believe that we really got this together and that this is going to happen. This is something that is so needed in the metaphysical community that no one does. It's just like this form that people fill out, and I've never even gotten an answer. So this is amazing. Is there anything that you want to tell us about you or dreams or your practice before we do go? Oops.
Sure.
Okay.
I do teaching of any. I do also informal conversations with people online. You can lean your speakerphone up against the wall, and I will talk to a group of people at a party or something about any questions regarding political issues in the religions or popular spirituality material, like what we've been talking about now. That would be the other unique thing I'm offering. And then there are classes and things like that, which I do. But those are the two things.
I'm sorry to have to interrupt you, David, but we have to go. We have another show. But please, I'd love you to come back. And please call David. I mean, just get in touch with him at www.worldspirituality.com. And he is there for you. Next week, we have Keith Long, and it's going to be very controversial. David, I thank you so much for being here with us, and I'd like to invite you back.
Thank you, Regina.
All right, everybody. I wish you a wonderful week, and I'll speak to you soon. You're listening to BBS. Bye-bye.